So just a quick introduction to our to my family and kind of how we came to Watermark, and it all started pretty much with the prodigal. This is my wife, Becky. We've been married for going on our 35th year, been together 39, so started dating when we were nine. Senior in high school, actually here in Richardson. We stayed here the entire time, and we raised our kids here. So our kids now are Blake is 31, Hunter's 29, and Haley's 24. And Blake was our prodigal, our oldest. He was the one with the most charisma, the outward personality, the one that his younger two siblings just admired, really looked up to, tons of friends, went to J.J. Pierce High School, just was, I mean, we had a backyard full of folks every day over there. And every time we came across, I tell you, the where you're proud is when you come across other parents and, oh, you're Blake's parents. Oh, my gosh, we just love him so much. And so we felt, wow, man, this is good. We're doing all right. We're doing okay. So Blake decides he didn't follow us and go out to West Texas to Texas Tech. He happened to go to a fall football game at University of Arkansas, and I think they were playing Auburn on a home game, and he got hooked. So he came home and said, I'm going to University of Arkansas. So that's where he went, and I'm telling you, the first 2 years, same pattern, looked great. By his sophomore year, he's vice president of interfraternity council. He's the social chair of his fraternity. We go up there. We're going to visit quite a bit. Oh, you're Blake's parents. Well, he's come to our house and spent the night, blah, blah, blah. All this is great. All of a sudden, after his junior year, now, I don't know if you've run into this, but you don't have any way of finding out how your kids are doing once they're 18 years of age. And my dad was an FBI man. He knew everything about me. I couldn't find anything about Blake, but I didn't think I needed to. We trusted that everything was going as it should, that he's making his grades and all that. And all of a sudden, we get this notice that I had an overpayment because he wasn't attending. Here this kid was the vice president of interfraternity council. He wasn't even attending the school. He had quit. And on probation and all sorts of things. And so we obviously sat him down that summer and said, you're not going back. And you're going to take some classes at Richland. And he just thought that was way beneath him. He tried that for about a day or two, and he just couldn't relate to that. And come to find out, that's you know, he was on marijuana. And I don't know, there was part of that that made me feel like I'm glad it's not anything more than that. But we put through strict instructions that if he's going to live with us, that he was going to take a drug test. And he failed the second one, and I had him pack his bags, and out he went. And he, you know, he's resourceful. Blake is. Sharp-looking guy, resourceful, charisma. I mean, if they didn't have the movie about with Leonardo DiCaprio and Frank Abagnale, it would have been about Blake Newsom, okay? Catch me if you can. He was clever, very good at it. And he couch surfed with a bunch of friends and took his showers at 24-hour fitness and looked like $1 million. He made it. All of a sudden, I get a call from him one day. He's in need. And guess what? Every time he was in need, guess who came running? $1,000 here to bail you out. Oh, you got evicted from this apartment, $1,500 here. Oh, you owe this guy $800. Yeah, I'll take care of that. Why? Because we didn't want anybody to know the issues that we were running into. It wasn't until we started attending Prodigal that we finally understood, open up about that, and all of a sudden you're going to find people that are your friends, that you start opening up to them about, hey, here's this Newsom family who you thought had to Leave It to Beaver lifestyle, and we're going to open up to you about some issues that we got with our son, Blake, and here's what every one of them, bar none, said. I'm so sorry you're going through that, but at the same time, we're so glad that you told us, because now let us share with you what we're going through.
Can I back you up for one second?
Sure.
And say, you, when you came to Prodigal, how did you find out? How did you get here? Where, most of the time, parents have to get to a bottom before they'll actually break out of a Tuesday night and come on up. So how did you get to here?
Well, we were kind of isolating a little bit because, you know, you're scared, you're embarrassed, you're like, oh, every time you'd go somewhere and people were going, oh, my son's working on his master's and got hired here or there, you know, and you're just like, oh. you know, how are you doing? And I'm
like, we almost didn't want to hear good things about other people.
Like, ah! You know, but no. So we, you know, would isolate some, although we were very social, but yet we would just not talk about it, like Kelly said. But no, one of the guys who actually goes to Watermark, and he and his family, their daughter was a prodigal, and they came to prodigal, and it just did wonders for them. And it's all about changing yourself, because you cannot change your prodigal, and get yourself right, you know, with the Lord, and be on the same page. And so that's what, you know, he told us about that, and that really helped. So it was a friend telling us about it.
And Blake and all prodigals, I think one thing they really have in common is they're smart folks, and they know how to play you. They're masters at it. And they knew when to go to mom and when to go to dad. And it wasn't until we really got aligned and he started hearing the same message from both of us. And there was some tough love that had to happen. There wasn't any doubt about it. So here's what happened. And he started to kind of turn the corner, and he's starting to get some things in order. And 08 was a terrible year for us from the standpoint that 06 is when, so he's about 2 years into some issues. And by the way, 14 failed drug tests. But every time it was marijuana, and there was this sense of relief that it wasn't cocaine or heroin or something more. But yet, I'm going to tell you, for those of you, if anybody discounts marijuana, that affected my son like crack cocaine does us some people. Made him steal, cheat, lie, do whatever he had to do to get it. It just, different chemicals will affect different people different ways. In 08, we lost both of our parents. I walked away from a great stable position at Director of Operations with Interstate Batteries and went into a private equity deal that in spring of 08 hit. It all came crashing down. Blake hit the peak of his issues. And it was rough. But by July of 2012, Blake started to turn the corner some, and we started seeing, and we're starting to do, okay, starting to take care of responsible things. Okay, go get your license renewed. So he went to go get his license renewed, and as he's up there at the counter, all of a sudden behind him, two constables come, and they cuff him and take him away because he had a warrant out in Garland for a probation or a misdemeanor from 2 years previous, which really, it was just a lost in the shuffle. It was one of those instances where he's going to go to jail for the night, he's going to be out the next morning. He ain't even going to stay in there for the night if daddy goes running and bails him out. But you know, we talked about it and we thought, let's let him stay the night. And then Blake called with kind of a bitter attitude that we're going to make him spend the night, and we thought, let's let him get a court-appointed attorney. So now it's going to take, he's then still bitter back to us, goes, well, I'll be out in 3 days because that's what they told me will happen. God delivered us the world's worst, and delivered Blake the world's worst court-appointed attorney. And this kid who knew how to navigate through every system in the world stayed for 69 days on a Class C misdemeanor. Saved his life. I never would have thought I would say that the best place in the world for my son to be would be in Collin County Jail with a bunch of other convicts. But on about day 31, he turned it around. He hit bottom. He turned it around. He picked up the Bible. Some things started to happen. Came back. When we picked him up on day 69, we saw the difference. He came to the porch Tuesday night right here, the 20-something gathering. We dropped him off because he didn't have his license. So, you know, mom dropped him off. He calls us about an hour or so later and says, you don't need to give me a ride. I've got a ride home. I thought, all right. About that time, about an hour later, up comes the street, this brand new BMW with this blonde driving it, driving Blake. And I go, oh my God, he's up to his old tricks. I go, no telling what he's told this girl. She gets out of the car. He gets out of the car. He doesn't seem agitated at all that she's coming up to meet us. So that kind of took me by surprise. She comes up and she goes, you must be Mr. and Mrs. Newsom. We just love you. We love your son. He told his story tonight, and I want you to know we're all there to support him and help him. And I looked at Becky and I looked at Blake and I go, oh my God. Step Blake inside, and this, what he said will stick with me for the rest of my life. I said, Blake, what happened tonight? He said, Dad, I don't know what it was. He said, I just got up in front of a bunch of folks, and I told my story, and I told them the truth. I told them what a mess up I've been and what I've done to my family and what I've done to my friends. And I told him what I wanted to be and what I aspired to be, and I'm going to do it. He said, and I told him the truth. He said, I always thought I had to lie to someone to get him to accept me. And I told someone the truth this time. And he said, I've never had more people to accept me. So here we are, 4 years later, Blake's been sober the entire time. There have been more drug tests. He's 31 years old, but he's on a strict probation with the county on drug tests. He's fulfilling all his obligations. He started a business. Right when he got out, his younger sibling, 2.5 years younger, who basically almost disowned Blake got out and started working on a house. He learned the trade real quick, how to remodel and how to work on houses. He did. And the first one he did was a house that his younger brother bought. The next one his sister bought, and then he did his own. And now he's got a thriving business as a remodeler and doing great, and we couldn't be any more proud of him. You know, you look forward to and you pray for a lot of things in life about your kids. They're the most important thing. I mean, your kid's worst day is your worst day. Their best day is your best day. I will tell you that the prayer that I always wanted for Blake as of about 4 years ago was an opportunity for him to turn it around and get up in front of this group right here and be able to share it. And I think that's what's going
to
happen.
Yep. I wanted to ask you a couple of questions. I took some notes just to make a couple of points. And the surprise is here. We're going to get to hear from the prodigal here in a minute. So I was excited about that. So,
sorry if I blew your cover.
No. It's great. But I just wanted to make a couple of points of what you said there is that, you know, you've heard us say a bunch of times about taking what you're learning here and leaving here and going and serving the King, right? And I don't know the family that told you to come here, right? But in terms, and you don't really have to, but that could be you. Because if you tell two people or two families about what you're doing up here, one of them's going to circle back to you. And you know that's true. Bring them along. I mean, because whatever, when that family gets to heaven, the Newsoms, you got a lot of people on your downline, right? You got people who is on your downline. I hope that this surgeon at Baylor, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. He may use somebody totally not me, but I want to have that opportunity to go tell him about Jesus. I think I know what he's going through, right? I know that he's a scientist. He's confused. He may not be understanding that this is all emotion and there's fact behind it and there's enough facts, as you know, to make our faith reasonable. But somebody, the Newsoms, are going to be on that downline. And when you get up to heaven, I think that's going to be the first 100,000 years, you know, when we sit around and say, well, then did you know that when you said that he said this and it got you to him and it saved and he knew Jesus because of that downline. And so you have that opportunity to use the things you use here to go and grab somebody and bring them up here, not because we need more people. Because we're equipped. I don't know where else to send them. There's people out there on their couches that are just like you that need help. So that's one thing. I wanted to commend whoever brought the Newsoms here, and I know many of you bring people up here. The other thing you said was you got on the same page so that you couldn't be divided. You know, Larry Miller, you know, who's here tonight, has said, you know, he said many famous things, but he always says something that the leaders say is that the prodigal will always catch the slowest gazelle. And so I was the slowest gazelle, that's usually the enabler. And so when you get together, it's hard to, it's the first step of being on the same page, because if you're not there and you don't really grasp those concepts, they'll always catch the slowest one. I wanted to ask you what that was like when you guys said no. You know, when you said, I think we're going to stay in jail. And one of the things I'm going through right now is that people think that it's easy, it gets easier to not enable. That's not been my experience. My son's tanking right now, and I got that tendency every day, right? Yeah. And so, but the one of the things that's helping me is because he's denying in it, he's manipulating, he's angry. And sometimes I think God gives that to me so I can stay strong, you know? Yeah. And so I'd like for you to address that and what that was like in those first few days when you did something that all of us would have a hard time doing. And that's saying no, and I'm going to let you get this crazy court-appointed attorney and go from there. What was that like a little bit?
Well, it was really hard, but I think we had just, you know, it just got where it was just unbearable, and we just thought, what we're doing is not working. If you keep doing the same thing over and over and over, and that's what we were doing. I mean, basically the same thing. And when we came to Prodigal, when, you know, the story of, you know, laying your Isaac down, I mean, the Lord loves Blake and all of our kids more than we even love them. And so it's still so tender. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
But so when we finally just realized that, oh my goodness, you know, the Lord's got this, and we trusted him and got out of his way, because it's like we kept delaying this whole process of Blake's healing, I think, by going, you know, catching him. And, you know, and God's like, gosh, if you just get out of my way and trust me, it's going to work out good. But we just kept, you know, trying to you know, enable or whatever it might be. But I remember going to see Blake. I could only see him a couple of times a week. And it was very strict, you know, the way they did everything. And so I would show up, and he would beg me to call his attorney. And I said, you know, you gave up your freedom by, you know, disobeying the law. And by doing that, I can't go and make that call for you because, you know, you have done this. And so it was very, very difficult, though. And I was angry that I was with, you know, having to go and see my son there. And then I started changing that perspective, even going to jail. I started talking to other people and trying to share my story and to help us both be strong and to stay focused on getting our children well, not trying to protect them and say that the system is wrong, you know, because you can want to blame somebody else. And by doing that, you know, it's just messing up the whole thing and delaying them getting better. And so I tried to use that opportunity to even witness to others and, you know, to say stay strong, because this really is, you know, a good place, because when they hit rock bottom, they're going to need the Lord more. They're going to want to change something. It takes all of us a lot longer than others maybe to get to a point where we want to change something. And for a lot of prodigals, you know, it takes a lot of going down, down, down. If we could fix it, we would fix it in a second, but we learned we couldn't fix it.
But day to day, in that first two or three times, those were the principles that guided you and kept you strong.
Yeah.
But I assume there was, I don't know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but there was a little friction there. Is that possible?
Friction with us?
Between you and Blake. Because you could rescue him, but you didn't.
Right. Yeah, I used that word. He was mad. He was mad to hear these people that had always been, why are you not doing this?
Okay.
You've got the money. What, $250 will get me out of here. Do it.
Okay.
Or call the attorney, one of the two, but, you know, do it.
That sounds like a perfect opportunity to get Blake on up here and respond to that. Why don't you come on up, buddy? I really had a great conversation with Blake this week, and just it was so encouraging to talk to somebody that was running his business and he was 5 years sober and been through that, and I thought it would really encourage him. I saw it to come up here. So Blake, I mean, you can say whatever you want, but you can start whatever you want. But I was going to ask. I want to make sure when you say whatever you want, I want to go make sure that some of the things we talked about I thought was really powerful. Like when you talked about, I think you said that those 69 days changed your life. So you can start wherever you want to, but make sure we talk about that.
Okay. So, I mean, first off, I want to thank my parents for, you know, telling that story. I also want to, you know, I think that they kind of also, just through wanting to tell it and shorten it up a little bit, didn't really explain quite how bad it was. I've been arrested probably 7 or 8 times. I've spent tons and tons of time in jail, more than just the 69. When you put it all together, I've missed a Thanksgiving with my family. I've also been told, you know, I can't attend Thanksgiving with the family because people don't, you know, feel comfortable with me being there. And when it comes to the last time when I did spend the 69 days, I think he had just that particular time mixed up with one of the other times that I had been arrested. This was a much bigger deal. It was two felonies, not just a misdemeanor. It was a $20,000 cash bond, not $250,000. That was for one before on just a possession of marijuana. Sure, yeah, he could have bailed me out, I'm sure, but it was a cash bond. It was $20,000. I mean, I wasn't getting out. I was angry. I didn't know what to do in there. I was stuck in a place where I was surrounded by a bunch of people that weren't like me, or I didn't feel like were like me, until days and days went on, and I finally realized that I am absolutely no different than any of the other people that I'm in here with. I've done the same things. I just maybe look a little bit better, you know, or a little bit sharper than they do, you know, but I'm no different. I'm just, you know, I'm a thug like they are, you know. And it was, you know, some of those things that helped to change me. But yeah, them finally, you know, them kicking me out and of the house and tell me to leave. It was a great deal. It worked for a second, but, you know, I'm resourceful. I had couches to go to. I had friends that would clean up after me, that would help me, you know, would allow me to stay there and stuff like that. And I tried for years and years and years to stop smoking pot, to stop lying to people, to stop fabricating stories about myself. And just never could, because I was scared and so... I mean, that was my life. That is what I knew at the time. I had fun. My friendships were developed through smoking pot. That's what we did to have fun. When I tried to quit, I couldn't, because I was scared that you couldn't have fun without smoking pot. Because that's what I knew, and I tried so many times. And it wasn't until that time when I got arrested and they said, no, we're leaving you here, you're going to have to stay here. And I went through the frustrations of the beginning of it and all that, that it was about halfway through whenever one day I woke up and I realized, this is the longest that I've ever made it without doing drugs. You know, it was like 30 days or something. I was like, I've never, not once, ever made it this long. I've tried and tried and tried a bunch of times. And that deal of being angry... just happened to switch that day to a sense of being, you know, angry or frustrated or wanting to smoke or you know, hang out with my friends. It went from that to all of a sudden a sense of almost being proud of the fact that I had made it that long, even though it was forced on me. And then as the time went by, I mean, I just kind of realized, like, hey, I'm stuck. I don't know when I'm getting out. I don't know, you know, what's to come from here. I mean, I knew my charges. It was, those were, you know, two to 20 year charges, you know? So in my head, I didn't know whether I was really going to get out at all or just eventually get transferred one day to a, you know, state penitentiary. You know, my mom mailed me a Bible. And I started reading, you know, that. And even while I was doing that, it's a lot of weird things that happened while I was in there that I still will never understand, don't have the answer to. It's really strict. There's, you know, guards watching everything and all that. So you wonder how certain things happen. But people saw me reading my Bible and would see me laying there in my bunk reading it all the time. And I would go and I'd get up and I'd lay it down on the bunk, or, you know, go and pull the little string and save my spot. And then I would leave and go use the restroom or something, or, you know, go out and play basketball for a second. And then I'd come back in and I'd open up my Bible and there'd be like a note in there, or it was flipped over to another page and something was highlighted. you know, just really, really, really strange stuff. And I would read it, and it was the weirdest deal. It was almost as if it was exactly what I was dealing with or thinking about that day. It was just like the weirdest, something that I'll never, ever, ever understand or ever be able to explain. But it was those things that helped me get through it. And then just the realization of, or, you know, finding that sense of pride in it, being sober for that long. And then, of course, you know, having to look through glass windows and, you know, to visit with your, you know, your mom and dad, and even my little sister, who's 7 years younger than me, came and visited one day. And, you know, looking through that glass at her was, that was probably one of the toughest things I've ever, I mean, physically being inside of there with 71 other guys was nothing compared to looking through the glass at your little sister that's, you know, I'm sure always looked up to you. But yeah, that's kind of the deal with jail. And then whenever I got out, fortunately, my parents were, you know, were willing to give me a second chance at that point. I was put on 4 years probation for one charge, 5 years probation for the other charge, deferred, fortunately. So whenever I'm, as of this September, I will have one of those charges dropped completely. And then as of December of next year, I'll have the other one dropped, and they'll never, ever be on my record. They had me move in. My dad gave me a list of rules to follow. I followed those and have, you know, continued to stay sober, feel, you know, proud of myself for getting off of drugs, and then go to Watermark. I did the community group thing and met the absolute best friends of my entire life through that I, you know, speak with every single day. I hang out with all the time. And I've finally learned that you can have a great time, and actually even a better time
without pot,
without smoking pot or lying to people or anything like that. Like I get asked the exact same question today, what I've been asked over the years, you know, like, well, what do you do for a living? Well, now I say I'm a general contractor. Before somebody asked me that, I didn't have a real answer for it because I didn't really do anything. Or I was a server at a restaurant, and I'd say, oh, well, you know, I do restaurant consulting, you know, or whatever. And, you know, they'd be like, oh, that's awesome, you know. And then the next time, you know, they would see me, they'd say, well, hey, how's that restaurant consultant thing going? And I'd sit there, and I'd be like, what are you talking about?
Right.
Because I forgot I ever even told them that.
I think we can all associate with that, can't we?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's a... It's just a crazy deal. I mean, I just...
Let me say a couple of things here real quick. I want to just comment on a couple of things that underline some principles we have. And one of those things is when you said... we were talking in leaders meeting now. How do you know when your son's returned, right? And it's pretty clear, right? I mean, it's we just don't believe it can happen. You know, we don't believe that our kids can really come back, our prodigals can really come back. This is a story I wanted you to hear, right? Because it happens, right? Now... The Newsoms have been faithful, and if Blake hasn't come back, I still have the Newsoms up here, right? My prodigal, I dream for my son Hunter to stand up here one day and do that. But the point is, I want you to know that, you know, you don't become prodigal leaders. You don't become, you know, when I tell your story, it has nothing to do with what Blake does. It really has to do with what the Newsoms did, not knowing how it was going to turn out. And it's really funny. I talked to both of them, and. You know, don't you find it interesting a little bit in terms of, I do understand your felonies and your 20,000 and whatever, but I got to tell you something. I don't know you well, but he could have probably written that $20,000 check. And there's many people in this room that have done it, you know, and it was probably harder than you think it was not to go do that. And everybody in this room knows that. And so it was funny that when I was talking, it was that 69 days or those several jail sentences that changed your life. And some of the comments you said there, Blake, were just so amazing. You know, when you said, I just told the truth. And I think of, you know, Proverbs 28:13 says, "He who conceals his sin doesn't prosper, but those who confess, who renounce them and confess, finds mercy." You know, and you live that out that day. And then some of the things that we struggle with. Sometimes, you know, attending Thanksgiving, attending Christmas, how do you handle these prodigals, these adult prodigals that are out there? And sometimes they can't attend Thanksgiving, sometimes they can. That's why we need counsel. But I'd say through that whole thing is that I think about that pain of not thinking Thanksgiving, not making Thanksgiving, and I think the pain, I think everybody in here was on the verge of tears when you were talking about that picture you painted of your sister, right? And when I've just now shut off my relationship with my son for a while because it's all about lying and manipulation, and I don't have a relationship. And when, you know, he texted me this weekend about being stranded on the side of the road and I didn't respond, that hurt. I mean, that was everything I could do not to go out there and pick him up. But he got through it, and I just kept thinking that pain that you still welled up a minute ago was part of the thing that got you home, got you thinking, I don't want to be here again. And I just want the parents to know that it's hard, but it started with a trust in God. It started with trust of these principles, and they're not my principles. They're not Jim's principles. They're just God's principles that are found in the Bible. So this is a great application of some of the things that we do. How do you know when your kid's home? He starts telling the truth. He starts being honest. He says, I am the bad crowd. I mean, he's the prodigal son said, I have sinned against God and I've sinned against you. And that's what he said, and it can happen. So I want you to be encouraged by that. And if it doesn't, and you don't see that till the day God brings you home, you stay obedient and he's still good. But you need to be encouraged that God can do that. And the thing that I would tell you is, again, that's really been on my heart, is that what you said about your Bible and those little things that showed up, that's what I want to ask God when I get there. Tell me about Blake's Bible. You know, I know you were up to something, and everybody in this room knows that God orchestrated and used some. Would you love to know who was putting those notes in there and how he was being led or she being led by that? Because you know that has to do with the power of prayer. This is a battle in the heavenly realms, and God was orchestrating that moment, and you can just see it. And so that's how he works. And the reason I know that, Blake, is because we've heard that story many times about how God shows up and does those little things, and it's not just you. So when you say those, it encourages, because we pray for our kids, and those are the stories we hear about how God works. So any questions before we go to the next one real quick? Anybody that has a burning question for the Newsoms? If not, we'll go on to the next one. But nothing? We got one question in the back. Scott? How are the siblings doing now? How did the siblings process this, and how are they doing right now?
They certainly distanced themselves.
This is being recorded. So the question was, how did the siblings respond to this, and how are they doing?
Well, during the midst of Blake's issues, they definitely backed off, and that was really tough on them, tough on Blake. We've had such a tight family and very difficult. But I will say now that if any one of them wanted to ask their two best friends to go to dinner or whatever, they're all best friends now. It's great. So it's turned full circle.
It was really interesting, too. The siblings were really angry at times. You know, they would try to help, and then they would get let down, you know, by something Blake would do. And then they would also watch us. Your other kids watch how you're handling things. And it was so interesting to hear them say, y'all have got to be tougher because you're giving all your effort to you're idolizing Blake and just living and breathing everything he's doing, and you're ignoring us. And you've got to be really careful about that because, you know, they are trying so hard to be good to help you, you know, and not be a problem, but yet they're feeling neglected. But I tell you, they learned so much, and there's a verse, and I know you know the verse because I remember hearing you say it so many times about, I'm so thankful for being afflicted because it changed my life so much. We are, I'm not doing it justice.
Psalms 119:71.
Yes.
It becomes a very funny note is that I was asked to do the journey next year, and I said, okay, with one request, we're doing Psalms and Proverbs. I want 1971, so I'm getting it.
Because that, our whole family, I think, has been transformed from this, because we are so honest with people now and talk to them, and they just said, I'm so glad to know that everything's not perfect for you. And they can open up and give their advice, and we can help share. And, you know, there's just, you can help each other so much, and it just really has transformed all of us. It's been really good.
Well, thank you, guys. We really appreciate it. So, you know,
hey, Jay.
Yes.
Can I make one comment? I just want to say this prodigal thing is really amazing. It is amazing to see how God works. We've only been here for 6 or 7 months.
I tell you what, we're recording this, so I'm going to have you repeat that. There you go.
Thank you. I just want to say how amazing this whole prodigal series is. We've only been here for 6 or 7 weeks.
Oh, that was awesome.
And ironically, the very first night we were here, we met Kelly. And I've only talked to Kelly personally 2 times, but Kelly, I do want you to know, and Blake, I want you to know, the trials that you've gone through have helped so many people so indirectly. But your dad, Kelly, I just want you to know, you've had a huge impact on my son. The one time that I met you, and then my son kept saying, this guy Kelly keeps calling me. You know, Kelly also helps lead a ministry here. I think it's called Careers in Motion. And although he didn't get the job through that Careers in Motion, you've had a huge impact through him, on my son. Yeah. I just want to say thank you for this whole series.
Well, God wanted me, thank you for doing that, because God wanted to remind me to say something, which I was going to lead with, and I totally forgot. But it's so funny. Part of the reason that he's here is that we got this call one night, and Kelly's out of the prodigal for a few months, and he was grilling one night. This is, how long ago was that? 3 or 4 months ago?
6 weeks ago.
6 weeks ago. So Kelly was here 6 weeks ago, and the deal was that he was at home on a Tuesday grilling, about ready to serve his family, and he got this overwhelming sense that he was supposed to come to prodigal for some reason. And he called his wife and said, I'm out on the dinner tonight. I'm coming up there. And I get this call, and Lisa goes, well, you know, Kelly's up here and feels like he needs to be here for some reason. And I said, well, I don't doubt that for a moment. So we had him go to Newcomers, and he met you. And that's how it all kind of came together. So